This is the Women with Vision podcast, where we get real with some of the leading entrepreneurial superwomen about what it takes to build a business online and beyond with kids, husbands, and everything else.
Hey there, superwomen. I am so excited today to have my next guest. You know, I met this woman, you know, believe it or not, at the beginning of the Boss Up movement, when we were just trying to figure it out, we're putting it together. And I got connected to this amazing woman, and she saw what we were doing right away and has been one of our biggest cheerleaders. She was so very instrumental in giving us the faith that this is going to work. And here we are, it's making it happen. And I think we're now in our third year, and I'm surprised that this is the first time we're sitting down to have this interview, but I am really honored to have her here. Miss Sue Ann Hung, how are you?
Hello, everyone. I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me on your show. And I know, Tim, you've been busy touring the U.S., so you guys have been doing some incredible work.
Well, you've been busy, too. I'm really excited. You know, you are the president and CEO of the Center for Asian Pacific American Women. You've been there as the interim executive director, and I'm excited to find out a little bit more about how you ended up in such an amazing position. What was your life before that? I mean, I'm sure you didn't end up in nonprofit just overnight. How did you get into the nonprofit industry? So just a little background on you.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I am an immigrant from South Korea. I came when I was 7, and I actually flew by myself to the States. Wow. I met my aunt here, and she ended up adopting me. You know, I'm her niece from her younger sister. And she made the decision that she was going to give me a chance to have a better life in the United States. And so we went from Chicago. I came to the U.S., met her in Chicago, and then we went to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. So I give you that background because I think that that's important personal background, as that that's part of who I am and how that influenced the way that I view the world. And, you know, I grew up in the U.S., lived in a lot of small and medium-sized cities, and again, very much focused on fitting in, very much focused on assimilation. Yeah. And I think that held true when I went in through, you know, corporate, when I was working for Fortune 50 company. And I probably, you know, I was with, you know, State Farm insurance companies for, you know, 28 plus years. I probably had about 4 different careers, and I never in a million years thought I'd be a nonprofit. Well, like any other large organization, you go through reorganizations. And by the way, a little side note, I happen to have gone through the CAPA, the Asian Pacific American Women's Leadership Institute program, back like in 2000, 2001. So I had already gone through the program that was sponsored by State Farm, which really, you know, changed the way that I view myself and the way that I lead. But that journey of going into nonprofit didn't happen until 2018.
Oh, wow.
So, yes, exactly. So when State Farm went through a reorganization, they went through a process where, you know, a lot of us, you know, were either getting a job that was either the same or different. It could have been a demotion, or some people got no job offers.
Wow.
And through my journey, I received a job offer, but it was one level below what I was doing for 9.5 years. Now, at the time, I was devastated.
Right.
At the time. And what I also realized was, once I could get out of the emotional sense that this was an opportunity to do something different, once I made the decision to say, you know what, I think I'm going to go ahead and do something different. 2 days later, after I made that decision, I got a call from one of the board members of CAPAN OCA, Organization of Chinese Americans, the national. At the time, she was on the board and national president. She's like, what are you doing? After State Farm, I said, I have no idea what I'm doing for the first time in my entire life. And she said, well, how about thinking about coming being an interim executive director? We just lost our executive director. Why don't you you know, think about coming over and think about it while you're figuring it out.
Oh, wow.
And that's how the journey began. Now, literally, that was 2 days after I hit the button. And then that Saturday after, it was like, guess what I'm doing? I'm going to go be a nonprofit leader. But the beauty of that is I went through the program so long ago. So it was already in my heart to begin with. Little did I know that it was going to be my passion.
You know, what's interesting? Yeah. So I'm listening to your story and I'm thinking, you know, you come into this country, you trying to fit in the Midwest, figuring out your way. It sounds like a lot of your experience in your life led you to this very moment in time. And you had to kind of come this way because what you do a lot of time is spearhead opportunity for other people. You know, I always talk about bossing up, but you really do help people boss up. You help women, Asian women. But a thing I noticed about you, Suann, which I am so appreciative, is you are the queen of bridges. You are really good at like closing the gap, not just saying, okay, this is just the Center for Asian Pacific Americans, but you're like holding other sisters' hands that are, you know, non-Asian, and you're like reaching over to African-American women, and you're doing, you know, it's like more diversity inclusion is, I think, I'm not sure if that's, was that intentional?
You don't even know that what you're asking me is so important to me. What you just said, mm-hmm. So insightful. And the reason is because, as you very well know, anti-Asian hate sentiments and Black Lives Matter, I mean, this has been a tremendous strain on communities in the last mm-hmm. several years. And it, as you recall, the Atlanta spa shootings occurred in yeah. March, right? We just commemorated, and I almost said celebrated, you know, but it was commemoration with a celebration of community.
Yes.
And I was literally at the march that Saturday after the shootings occurred. I was at the community march in downtown at the Capitol. And as I started to walk, I got a phone call from Walmart Center for Racial Equity. And they're like, hey, Suann, we know you're doing work in the Asian American women's space, but you're also doing some work in the space for women of color. Yeah. What are your thoughts about starting something in that space more formally? And oh, by the way, you have till Monday to figure it out. I was like, oh, okay. So what I did was I took pieces of what I thought was really significant for the APALE program. And then I incorporated those things that the women were telling me that they needed. And so we came up with a program called Unleash the Shiro in You is what it's called. And in fact, for all of you, so this was a focus specifically on women of color who've been in the workforce professionally for 5 years or less. And the fact that these women needed allyship, they needed a space where they're supported. They need mentors and sponsors. They needed a network. And by the way, we did not want them to be by themselves out there trying to figure it out.
Right.
So we literally took 24 women and we said, let's walk them through this program that we created. So we went from June and they graduated virtually in March. Wow. And I was so honored to have them as part of our programming. So it's Asian, Black, Hispanic, and Native American women, who, by the way, never get talked about hardly.
Yeah.
And the fact that these women from all over the country came together as community, and that's so important.
It's so important.
It's so important. And you hardly, I can't even think, you know, how many times you see an Asian American organization that's women focused that are also focused on women of color.
Yeah, you don't see that. And I noted that right away. I mean, that's spearheading something like that. That's why I call you the queen of bridges, because you just literally reached over the bridge and said, you are my sister. And I know we share a commonality. So many, I interview women all day long.
Yeah.
And it's so important for us to understand that we're so much more alike than different.
Absolutely. And Tam, I think one of the things that I learned from this humbling experience is, first of all, my board was so supportive. They brought it up. They said, hey, what are we doing to support our sisters? You know, like, that's great that we're doing our thing, but what can we offer So the vision of my board, I thought was amazing because that's what we needed. We needed to all collectively do this together. Yeah. The second thing is that a lot of these women I noticed, you know, they would never be able to afford, you know, whether it's a Harvard program or, you know, these are a lot of these women are coming from a very modest economic background. They could not afford a leadership program in this way. And so for us to be able to offer that, and by the way, I don't charge. It's all, I raise the money. We fund it through, you know, the Center for Racial Equity. And now we've got other sponsors coming on. And that to me is what we need. We need access for these women. We need to be able to support them in a way because beyond the economic situation, they have trauma. There's all kinds of responsibilities that these women are carrying.
Yeah.
That's way beyond what I know I had to deal with when I was that age. So it's an incredible opportunity to support.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I remember you were at the beginning of this program and I'm glad to hear that it went so well. What is some of the challenges you think, you know, you may have personally experienced in corporate America? Now, in this particular series, we have women that are entrepreneurs. We have women from, you know, corporate positions, high corporate positions. They all have similar experiences. So the first question for you is, what are some of the things that you've had to experience as a woman of color in the workplace in the past? And how can we support our sisters in these situations so that they don't, so that they can navigate it or have someone to talk to?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I was very, you know, one of the things that I noticed right away is the, when I first got in to State Farm, I had a supervisor who was very, very attentive about my training. I mean, I used to get literally like a weekly schedule of the things that I was going to do. It was very specific. There was a cadence. She met with me. I got feedback. So what I learned right away was that it was important for that, how important that immediate supervisor is. And by the way, I've had career, you know, times where I was very well supported with mentors, sponsors, and then there were periods of time that were not. Yes. And you could see the stark difference.
Yes.
So when I think about, especially from my perspective, Asian American woman, that race and gender, you know, the intersectionality, stereotypes of Asian American women, the model minority myth, meaning that Asian people, they don't need help because they're doing so well. And then the fact that, you know, the cultural values that we bring to the table are not necessarily looked upon as an advantage. And so, and I would say it could be looked upon as a disadvantage.
Yeah.
The fact that you have one in five women, and this is according to, you know, the Women in the Workplace 2021 report from McKinsey and Lean In, which, you know, when you look at one in five women being C-suite, one in 25 women, women of color in C-suite, one in 50 AAPI women, that's not acceptable. And so there were times in my career, I literally felt like I was, you know, I was very supported, like I said, by sponsors, those who told me early on things like, you need to move over from a general department to an area that to really understand the business, you have to be on the business side of the company, underwriting, claims, agency, the sales. So I got those kinds of tips very early. Later on, when you don't get that kind of intel, you're lost in a lot of ways. You don't get that same kind of guidance,
right?
That you don't get the same kind of that political landscape that like you, I was saying this to someone, you could step in a landmine and nobody would, like you have no idea. And then by the way, nobody tells you that you did.
Right.
Right. So there were a couple things that from my perspective that during the transition, when we went through this whole thing, I was not focused at all about managing my brand. So one, I was so mired in the work and trying to take care of my people and trying to draw. I did not sit there and manage my brand. I had three vice presidents in 1 year. Do you think they all knew who I was and what I was about?
Wow, right?
Mm-hmm. And that's probably not unusual when you're going through transitions. You have multiple bosses and whatnot, but you, it's your job to manage your career. It's your job to manage your brand. And I didn't do that. And so they didn't know who I was. Like one of the bosses that I work with, he had no clue who I was, nor did I even, in fact, I did the opposite and distanced myself because I didn't feel safe.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so that was really hard because it was the first time probably I felt like this person has no clue who I am. They don't care about who I am. I could be here or not here and it wouldn't matter. And so I felt myself distancing and disconnecting, and that's the last thing you should be doing. So you know, when it came, yeah.
You know what's interesting, and I'm hearing a lot that I'm picking up on myself. I did the same thing in corporate America. I'm not sure if you feel a sense of you don't belong necessarily, but it is up to you to manage your brand and forever.
Is.
Yeah,
it is.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I didn't do that. The second thing that I would share is that, you know, I was good at, to your point, managing like outward, the relationships, the peer relationships and all of that. But I didn't do as good of a job, and I'm just being honest with myself, managing upward.
Up, yeah.
All right, so, and there's a certain way you have to do that depending on who you're working for and your brand and how that's carried. So I think part of that is, okay, how do I strategically place myself? Like when I'm in a meeting where I have an opportunity to share my thoughts, I better share it mm-hmm. and not sit there and not say one word because I feel disconnected.
Right.
You know, so things like that where, you know, you're kind of being evaluated based on how your value is perceived.
Right.
By other people. You have to manage that. And you have to be deliberate about that. And I think I lost that for a while. I did. I know I did because I wasn't feeling great.
Yeah.
I was not feeling valued.
That's incredible advice. I mean, incredible. I think about my own career and even now as an entrepreneur, you still got to continue to just not get mired in the work. You have to continue to manage your brand and figure out where you're going. What keeps you inspired now? Because you've been doing a lot, you're creating amazing things. What is keeping you inspired for the work?
I watch, like, first of all, when I look at the Apali Fellows, the class is going right, we're in the middle of the class, midway, mm-hmm. and I see the growth of these women, you know, and this is about personal growth first and foremost, right? For Shiro's mm-hmm. or the Apali program, I feel like it creates a lot of hope. In that when I see the transformation, or even if they said, I can focus on changing this about what I want to do, I have a better feel for my life purpose. I am more aligned to who I am and what I'm about. And I'm going to go after something that I've been thinking about, but maybe I didn't have the guts to do it before. I didn't have the courage. That is just, to me, very inspiring. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, I always say that my life purpose now is, you know, I'm living in my truth, and then I'm going to create space for others to live in there so they can go serve their purpose and change the world, right?
Right.
So that's my purpose. And so if I can create these spaces where people can do that and feel like they're going to be more clear about what they're about and how they're going to do it, I feel like I'm doing my dream job.
Yeah. What happens to someone who graduates from your program? What changes in her career? What have you seen, like some examples that you've seen from some graduates other than yourself, because you're a graduate as well and you became the president of the whole thing. But
so as an example, you know, when I think about the Shiro group, the first group we've ever had, the inaugural group, one of the things that I noticed was, you know, as we go through the program, some of them are like, you know what? I need to negotiate for what I deserve, what I feel like I deserve. I've not done that before. I'm going to go negotiate my contract. And oh, by the way, I don't think this is the area I want to be in. I want to be in this area. So I'm going to ask for that. Just asking for what you want. I'm like, oh my God, this is huge, right? Or the fact that, you know, even if you don't, so my thing is, don't get, you know, you can't control the conclusion, but you can certainly control your actions about what you ask for and the fact that you ask for something at all that you feel like you deserve and that your value and your self-confidence elevates. Because we measure that through a company that we work with called Relations Research. They actually benchmark our women to be able to say, hey, where are you at the beginning of the program, the middle? And then, you know, what are some examples of where you feel like you're making a difference in your behavior? It's all about our own behavior and beliefs. So the self-confidence, taking action because you're feeling more value for yourself. So you ask for what you want and then make change where you have control. So those are some things that I'm seeing with these incredible women. And then they just feel like they have a community and they're not by themselves.
I love it. Okay. So what if someone is in corporate or in a position where they want to go through your program, they see a benefit, how do they do that? Do they go through their company to get them to, you know, sign off on that, or they can connect with Kapal directly? How does that work?
So I'm always recruiting people. So the very first thing I always say is, and come talk to me at shong@apa.org, apawomen.org. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I always try to do is lay out what the program's about, what we're trying to accomplish and why, and then see if the person's even interested. And then if they work for a corporation, then yeah, one of the things that I say is go ask your supervisor if they would support you for the program. For those who are in nonprofit, academia, government, entrepreneurship, and others, you know, I've got all kinds of sponsorship opportunities or volunteerism. There are different ways to contribute. So I probably have about at least probably 70% of the people on scholarship for the APALE program. And like I said, the SHERO program, I don't even charge. Wow. So that's one of the things that I offer. And the SHERO program is open right now for registration. And so, I mean, if you look on my LinkedIn, Sue Ann Hong, it's out there. You just have to apply. Resume, photo, one letter of recommendation, and then you interview. That's it. That's the process. It's very simple. I try to keep it very simple because I don't want to put hurdles in the application process.
Right. I love that.
So that's what we're doing. And so my recruiting is till the end of the month. So there's over 2 weeks left if you're interested in the SHERO program.
I love it. Okay. So what is, before we end this, what is some of the things you would like to say to motivate women of color or to support Asian American women at this point that you just want to share with them? You know, we just came through Asian Pacific American Month, but I know that you're just like me, I'm Black all year, you're Asian all year. What would you like to leave them with?
Yeah, Tam, thanks for saying that we can celebrate Asian people beyond May.
Yeah.
That's so amazing. So I would say a couple things. One is that, are there barriers? Yes. Are there anti-Asian hate sentiments? Yes, there are those things. However, there is a place that, you know, I always say, look within. There's all the raw materials are in there already. You just need somebody to help you pull that out and develop. And I think that it can be done. We have incredible, talented women. And there's no reason why we can't achieve what we want to achieve with some help from our friends and our sisters and our allies. And I think that's the thing. Tap into those resources. Don't try to do it by yourself. Right. But you've got it. All the raw materials are already there. I think it's a matter of us trying to help others to pull that out and develop and move further by supporting them. So come see me.
Yes.
You know, come join our efforts and come join our programs. And if nothing else, I can connect you probably to someone who can.
I love that. Sue Ann, one more time before we let go, what is your contact information and the website again for?
The website is capaw.org, kapaw.org. And my contact information is SHONG@APAWOMEN.org, APAWOMEN.org.
I love it. Thank you so much, Suann. I cannot wait to all the stuff that we're going to be doing together.
Thank you so much. So proud of you.